Senate Education Committee is called to order. Thank you for being here. Today is Tuesday, February 26, 2019. The time is 8:30. In attendance are Senator Birch, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich. I assume Senator Costello will be with us shortly, and Senator Stevens. So if a quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to be hearing Senate Bill 53 relating to a new university accreditation reporting requirement on the status of its various accreditation programs throughout the university. Intent today is to move this bill on to its next committee of referral, which is the Finance Committee, and try to adjourn by 9 o'clock. If we can, it'd be nice if we could do that, because the Finance Committee is hearing from David Teal on the important budget issues that we're facing. So because our time, we have some constraints, we'll not be taking up Senate Bill 56 at this time, but we'll get to it as soon as we can. So we have a CS for Senate Bill 53 before us, a version M. You have it in your packet. Could we have a motion, please, to adopt the CS for discussion? Senator Hughes.
Yes, happy to do that, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt CS for SB 53, version M, as the working document of the committee.
Thank you, Senator Hughes, and I'll object for purposes of discussion and ask Mr. Lampkin to go through the changes with us. Tim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you should be version M. This, again, is in response to a recent loss of accreditation of the UAA School of Education, apparent communication breakdown. And this would help include the legislature in the loop. Section 1 was a result of the report The existing statute reads that there's a reporting requirement for teacher training and preparation, retention, and so forth. That report is due by the 30th legislative day of the first regular session of each new legislature. The statute currently reads that the report is to be received and prepared and presented to the education committees. And under the circumstances, I reported last time that the report had not been received by us, the education committees. However, it was ascertained that the report had been submitted to the Senate Secretary and the House Chief Clerk. And so that was promptly rectified. So we stumbled upon an unintended consequence, because not only did that occur, but also the fact that on the deadline date, there was no organized education committee in the other body. So this new Section 1 would both reflect, kind of have a fallback that the report is henceforth submitted to the legislature, the Secretary in the House, Chief Clerk, as presented to them, but then in turn submitted to them, but then in turn presented to the respective education committees, the scheduling for which would be at the discretion of the chairs. So that's the Section 1 that you see, is to make a tweak in that scheduling report requirement. It also just sort of conforms with existing reporting requirements in the 30th day to the legislature, with a variety of other reports that are due. So it just sort of aligns that statute language with all the other reporting. So that's why we see Section 1. Section 2 is the new reporting section as regards accrediting for the University of Alaska. It gives some more detail for what the report should contain. It uses some common vernacular as describing what's to be expected. In your packet, you should have on file a spreadsheet that looks like this. It's titled the UA Program Accreditation Summary, dated February 21st, 2019. I simply used the column headers on that report that they currently do and provide for the Board of Regents, and I incorporated that language, that vernacular, in the CS. Likewise, in the fiscal note, it cites existing Board of Regents policy, and I again use terms from the fiscal note to incorporate in the CS, and again to kind of give some parameters, some definition, clear definition of what the report should look like. This CS should therefore fairly align with what the university is doing right now logistically and in terms of the report components. And particularly, I guess one thing that's added is to give specific attention to any accrediting that may be compromised or that they suspect could be compromised and want to see how we can remediate that. The goal here, of course, is to be preemptive rather than reactive. That's kind of the summary of the CS, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions for Tim? Yes, Senator Hughes.
Well, first I want to say I really appreciate and like the part than anything that might be a concern would be highlighted, because I think that's important. I just have a question of how it might work in future years for the in-person report to the committees, because let's say in 2 years Senator Stevens were the education chair again, he would remember to have that in-person presentation. A future education chair might not realize that. So would this, by virtue of the fact that the university is required to present it in person, or the Board of Regents, would they be sure to let whoever is the education chair in the House and Senate know that, so a year wouldn't slip by where it wouldn't happen? I'm just concerned a future education chair might not realize they're supposed to call them forward and have this presentation. So does it put it on the university to present in person and notify the education chair, whoever that might be?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the language is crafted to give a fair amount of flexibility to the legislature. There's a lot of institutional history here, a lot of institutional traditions. I think it's safe to say that between the Senate Secretary, the House Clerk, both bodies' chairs, the advocacy of the members of each body, between all of those folks, I'm very confident that such a presentation would be scheduled.
And follow up?
Yes, Senator.
And just looking too, it says the Board of Regents shall prepare and present in person. So it's telling the Board of Regents what they shall do. So it's not saying the education chair shall call the Board of Regents to present. So I think it does put it on the Board of Regents, but I just want to get that on the record so that if an education chair failed to request it, it would be on the Board of Regents. Thank you.
That's a very good point, Senator Hughes. I think we should be aware that an issue like this, like the reporting on the education teaching programs, I think probably in the past and hopefully in the future, it'd be a joint meeting of the House Education and the Senate Education. So there'll be sort of a double system of watching and making sure that it occurs. Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just struck by the fact that there are dozens of accreditation agencies, ranging from the FAA to the Auto Technicians Foundation. It seemed like I guess my narrow little world of ABET and engineering. I'm amazed at the broad range and diverse nature of the accrediting bodies that are included in the 6 pages of accreditation summary. And I at some point it'd be kind of interesting to know. Does the university pay us to have a membership? I mean, I don't think ABET does this for free, so I'm assuming that they're, it might be interesting. I see the university represented in the audience today. Maybe it'd be of interest to know how big a check we're writing to these dozens of different accrediting organizations, because obviously there's some expectation that they're going to come up and perform that function for us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good comment, Senator Birch. It is a time-consuming process. I mean, it goes on for about a year, or 2 years actually, often before it finally gets to the end. So, yeah, there are a lot of expenses there. So maybe we'll ask as we get to it, Mr. Baker, to make some comments on that. Anything further, Tim?
Through the chair, Senator Birch, just for the record, there is quite an elaborate network of accrediting bodies out there. We have online Dr. Carey that's available to speak to accrediting issues. Mr. Baker is available to speak to a possible change in the reporting date as well as the fiscal note. I should mention in conclusion that I can cover the sectional. It's just going to be, though, another demonstration of what I've already explained to you, essentially. In the interest of time, I would just bring to your attention that there is possible consideration for the second date. August 15th was chosen as approximately 6 months after the first report. But that may or may not align as efficiently with the Board of Regents meeting schedule, and Mr. Baker is available to address that further.
Thank you, Tim. Then let's go to Miles Baker and ask that question about the best time, the best dates for these. Mr. Baker, if you come forward, thank you very much for being with us. Good morning. Miles is the Associate VP, Vice President of Government Relations. Thanks for being with us, Miles.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Miles Baker, I'm Associate Vice President of Government Relations for the University of Alaska. To Mr. Lampkin's comment, the board is on a fairly regular schedule. The meetings get changed occasionally, but in terms of the sort of the mid-year period, we typically have a board meeting the first week of June, and then the second week of September. And the period in between there is the student summer period. Much of our faculty is out in the field doing that sort of thing. So so I had suggested that we certainly could do could comply with the way it's written here, but that, you know, a June 30th date, June 30, July 1st, would allow the board meeting in June to review this report right before it comes to the legislature. Alternatively, a September 30, October 1st time frame would allow them to review it in their fall meeting. So that was the only thought there on that mid-year date.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Very good point. Senator Hughes.
So the report that would be coming in January would be a report that would be approved in December then?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, correct. It would be done in our fall meeting, which is typically in November. We have had meetings. We had a sort of an emergency meeting this January, so occasionally that happens. But typically we do our budget, that fall meeting is based on the budget cycle. So we do it in time to be able to submit our budget to the governor's office by the end of November.
It seems like the June 30th, July 1st would be more evenly spaced than if it's a November report that's coming to us in January.
Do you have any response to that, Ms. Baker? What you're saying is that that you might find it easier if the board meets in September to have this report due October 1st. That seems to be what you're saying. Is that right?
Through the chair, yes. Either September 30, October 1st, whatever. End of the month, beginning of the following month.
What do you think?
Certainly would be fine.
Well, I thought, Miles, you also said an option would be after the June 15th meeting.
Right.
Board meeting to do it like a July 1 date, and that's what I was suggesting, Mr. Chair, might be more evenly spaced. Did I hear that correctly, that July 1st was something that would work for the Board of Regents?
Correct, through the chair.
So June 15, their meeting, July 1st, the report. That's only 2 weeks. Is that sufficient, do you think, Miles?
That's very sufficient, Mr. Chairman. We've enacted, as I mentioned, we've enacted some fairly significant process changes, and I think that would be very, very doable.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hughes.
And is it my understanding the Board of Regents would not be developing the report during those 2 weeks, but they'd be approving that report on June 15th, and then it would be made available on July 1st if we were to use that date? Is that correct?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, that's correct. We would have it as an agenda item for the board, and as with your meetings, they would typically get that agenda in advance. They would discuss it, and any issues would come up at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Senator Ragich.
Just very quick, so do you need us, somebody to make an amendment then to change on line page 2, line 22, August 15th to July 1?
We will need to make that amendment when we get to that point, and Senator Hughes is prepared to do that. So, yes, Senator Birch.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Baker, for your testimony this morning. I've had a number of inquiries from people associated with the university, either students, faculty members, or other affiliation, about the availability of the Board of Regents meetings, and I honestly haven't dialed it in, but are those meetings available? Are they live streamed? Are they archived? Are they, what sort of a record is made? Because obviously there's a lot of interest in kind of the Board of Regents activities and agenda and initiatives and so forth. Are those meetings, just for somebody that doesn't know, are those meetings available online, like our legislative committee meetings and so forth?
Senator Birch, through the chair, currently the Board of Regents meetings are streamed live. All of the committee material is out in advance, a week in advance. We comply with all the Open Meetings Acts. This question has come up in the past. The law requires that the board keep the minutes of the meeting, which has not resulted in, so we haven't been archiving. We don't archive those board meetings. They are streamed live, and then we prepare minutes of that, those meetings. Those are approved at the next meeting, and that is what has been provided to date as the official minutes of those meetings.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And Mr. Baker, any comments on the fiscal note? We have that before us.
Mr. Chairman, I, other than perhaps, you know, making some slight changes to the description to comply with the changes in the CS, there's no expectation that the fiscal note will change in terms of the finances. This is something that we'll have integrated in our system, and we don't anticipate any additional costs associated with this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Any further questions of Mr. Baker? Yes, Senator Hughes.
I actually just note in the fiscal notes it talks about annually the internal processes are annually reported to the board, but it sounds like you're going to switch to twice. They're going to switch to twice a year. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, correct. So we'll make that change, and we've also, as I mentioned when the committee took the bill up the first time, we've established a number of interim steps between the campuses, the provost, the Academic Student Affairs Council. We also have a group called the Academic Council that meets monthly that will have this as an agenda item. So by the time we get to these specific periods of preparing the legislative reports, we should have ample information. And at each of those meetings, the internal discussion has been any feedback that's been provided by an accreditor in the term of a self-assessment or feedback on a site visit, those sort of things are going to be reported up the chain during those review periods.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. So there's a lot to do. I mean, as Senator Birch pointed out, there's a lot of accreditation agencies, and are you prepared to answer the question that Senator Birch had about the cost of, I mean, how is this funded, the accreditation agencies? I know it's expensive. How does that actually work? Are you aware of that, Miles?
Senator Stevens, Provost Carey is on the line and may be able to. I don't want to.
No, that's fine. We'll ask.
In terms of whether we pay membership fees to accrediting bodies, I know we incur significant costs internally to do those accreditations. They are typically multi-year processes. But I can certainly go back, unless Provost Carey has a comment, I can certainly go back and provide the committee with some more information.
Good. We'll go on and do that and understand that it's absolutely crucial that we do have accreditation, and every university, a major university, goes through that process. As expensive and time-consuming as it is, it's a very valuable process. So thank you very much, Mr. Baker. Appreciate your comment. Let's go on to Dr. Carey. Dr. Carey is a provost, University of Alaska. Dr. Carey, are you with us?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. So, yes, every accreditation body is going to charge a fee for the university to be a member of that accrediting commission. So if you think about the Northwest Commission for Colleges and Universities, which all of the universities in Alaska are a member of, each of us do pay a fee to the Northwest Commission. Like with ABET, the engineering accreditation, we pay a fee for them. We pay a fee for every accrediting body for CAPE. All of them require a fee. All of them require us to pay for their site visits. So it is expensive, but as you said, it's absolutely necessary for our programs to be accredited, for our students then to be successful later on.
Thank you, Dr. Carey. I'm a little familiar with the Northwest Commission. That's the big one, I think, that really gives accreditation to all of the major elements of the university. And they spend a lot of time. Actually, several members come to the university, to come to Alaska, a lot of travel, a lot of time, and, of course, a lot of time on the part of yourself and the administration as well as the faculty. So it's a very big thing. I think I understand what you're saying, and I assume you'd agree that it's a very big thing, Dr. Carey.
Yes, sir, I would. It is a very big thing. We are getting ready here at the Juno campus at Southeast to go through our Northwest self-evaluation, and then we will have a site visit on April 24th, 25th, and 26th. We will have 9 members of an evaluation team come to campus for 3 days to review what is in our self-study, and we have been working very hard for the last year getting that report ready and preparing in every way for that site visit. So it is a lot of work, and every program needs to stay on top of their accreditation to make sure that they are meeting all the requirements of the accrediting body that are spelled out.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Gray. So when the Northwest Accreditation Committee arrives here in Juneau for a site visit, they meet with you and the faculty, and I assume would they have any recommendations at that time on things that they see that needs to be done that you would work on before the final report? Do I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, the way this works is that they will come to campus. They will have our self-study. We have completed our self-study, and it has been sent to them. They read that in advance. They come to campus and verify that what we say in our self-study is actually what we're doing. They will meet with a student group. They'll meet with faculty. They'll meet with staff. They'll meet with our advisory council and members of our community. They'll also meet with members of the Board of Regents. At the conclusion of those 3 days, the chair of the evaluation team will meet with the chancellor and then will present an overview of what they found, just verbally. And then several weeks later, we will get a written report of their recommendations and what they would be requesting us to do. That report then would go to the actual 11-member panel of the commission who will vote in June, I think it's June 20th, 21st, about whether to approve our accreditation, give us partial accreditation, or ask us to be put on probation, or finally to deny accreditation.
Well, thank you, sir. That's a very complex process, and we appreciate all you have done to see that that your portion of the university gets that accreditation. Any questions, Senator Birch?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for joining us this morning. I noted that there are 65 different accreditation programs and a myriad of agencies. The bulk of them, I see there's maybe 3 that go back. The date of initial accreditation was 1940 for the civil engineering ABET accreditation in Fairbanks and 41. There's like 3 of them that are back to 41. Basically, everything else there must have been kind of a flurry after 74. So I'm just curious as to, is this accreditation how do you promote how do you pay for the cost? As Senator Stevens indicated, I mean, obviously it's necessary, but with 65 different programs, I'm just wondering, do you have a rough order of magnitude estimate of the cost of the accreditation process, as important as it is, through the chair?
Thank you, Senator.
So I'm guessing that question is for me. Thank you. So each accrediting body tells us in advance what the fee will be for that year or for subsequent years. So the way that works is in our budget, we set that money aside early on when we first get our funding so that we are able then to follow through with the accreditation of each program. In the late 60s and early 70s, there was a great push for programs to demonstrate that they were actually providing the education that students needed to be successful in whatever career those students were going into. So almost every professional field today has an accrediting body to make sure that programs are really meeting the expectations of what's required in the field so that students can be prepared when they complete their education.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Burt. So I guess you could say, Dr. Carey, that some accreditation bodies are, dare I say, more important than others, that the major Northwest accreditation is the biggie, the big one, and then in addition there are some programmatic accreditations. Is that true?
Yes, that is true, Mr. Chairman. The Northwest Commission accreditation is the big one. In order for us to have any access to any of the federal programs through the Department of Education at the federal level, we must be accredited by the Northwest Commission. In many cases, such things as ABET, other accrediting bodies, those are very important to employers, that students come out of accredited programs. But the big one is the Northwest Commission.
Thank you, Dr. Carey, very much. Any further questions? Thanks for being with us today, and best of luck to you as you move forward on your accreditation. Thank you so much.
Let's
move on to a possible conceptual amendment. Senator Hughes, did you have one you'd care to make?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move a conceptual amendment to CSSB, the committee substitute for SB 53, version M, page 2, line 22, to delete August 15th and replace with July 1.
Thank you very much for that amendment. Is there any discussion on it? Any questions? Any objection? Then we will amend CS Senate Bill 53 before us. We'll make that amendment. Let's move on to public testimony. We have been in public testimony before. I want to make sure that we catch everyone that might want to testify on this. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify? Anyone online that would care to testify? Then we'll close the public hearing. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Then I'll remove my objection for discussion. And can we have a motion, Senator Hughes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 53, version M, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Without objection, the bill passes from the committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Ready, back to order. If there's no further business before us, and we are adjourned at 9 a.m.